For 25 years, Stamps.com has made mailing and shipping easy. All you need is a computer and printer. Imagine mailing and shipping right from your desk, anytime. No traffic, no waiting, no hassle. Plus, Stamps.com gives you discounts up to 84%. Sign up for Stamps.com today. Use code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus postage and a digital scale. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in. 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Rick Stroud going to join us coming up 20 minutes from now. We will preview the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with a little first and goal style. Safety for the Ravens, Marcus Williams, as we'll do another first and goal today. We'll double dip in those waters, previewing the Baltimore Ravens at 7:20 p.m. Eastern, 4:20 p.m. Pacific. And then if you are a fantasy football fan, welcome in fantasy football expert Jamie Eisenberg, who helped me win my league a few years ago, telling me to go pick up Jeff Wilson Jr., and then he had a big weekend. Jamie Eisenberg will join us as we prep for your fantasy football draft. But first up, producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
So Hard Knocks debuted last night. The Jets, who didn't want to do Hard Knocks, are on the show this year. And I have very low expectations for Hard Knocks, because when a team doesn't want to do it and the teams have control of what gets out there, I don't expect it to be juicy. The last time Hard Knocks was really good was, for me, when the Cleveland Browns were on it. You had Hugh Jackson fighting with Todd Haley. You had Bob Wiley talking about stretching and how he can't stand it, and with his gut saying, "Hold it, hark!" You had those things, which were fun. And even like a fake outrage and a speech by, who was the player? Jarvis Landry was the player, which you could tell was very contrived, was the word that I was looking for. Like last year, and maybe it's just because of how we kind of are wired now, I thought Hard Knocks was good on social media, and the clips that were put out there were good, but when you watch the actual hour-long episode, even with good personalities that the Lions have, I was bored at times last year. And last night, this is the best way that I would describe the Jets on Hard Knocks last night. If I was a Jet fan, which I'm not, I'm sure Jets fans eat it all up because it was very positive, and the Jets fan has not had many things to be positive about in a long time, and you're just like walking on water right now, and you're hopping around, and you have an extra pep in your step because nothing could go wrong for now with your football team because you have Aaron Rodgers. I'm sure that you probably thought it was better than what it actually was. But Hickey, here's the best way that I would describe Hard Knocks from last night. We all love Hard Knocks because it gets you closer to football season. I didn't have to sit there and have it be on my television and it be the only thing that I'm focused on, because it wasn't that captivating. Last night's version of Hard Knocks was perfect background noise, where if you have to go do the dishes, you fire up Hard Knocks, you do some dishes, you sit down, maybe you go to the pantry, you keep on having it being played, you go get some trail mix, a snack, some popcorn, you go back down, then you have to go back to the bathroom, and then you get back to your couch. I didn't have to sit there through the hour of Hard Knocks last night and be plugged in, sitting there with like a pen and paper jotting down notes for the show, because I was going to learn some crazy things about the Jets. So Hard Knocks for me last night, Hickey, was good background noise. It was something that you're not going to be like, "Oh, it's horrible. Oh, it's awful. I don't want to listen to," but I don't need to be in the zone watching Hard Knocks.
It was predictable. The word I would use is predictable, because right now it's been an infomercial for these teams. It's basically a free promo for the season. Everything is positive. Everything is all great. Everything is dandy. They could easily dress up the Arizona Cardinals and have you believing after episode one, this team's going to go 15-2.
That.
They only highlight the positive, and they always spin it to where there's a chance, or you can now start believing, huh, maybe this team is better than we thought. And you see on Twitter yesterday, a lot of people are talking about it today, Jets, Super Bowl.
But there's a reason to believe in the Jets. And I'm not saying that they're going to go to a Super Bowl, but they're a top five team on paper in the AFC. So there's a reason to believe in the Jets with their defense. You have the reigning offensive and defensive rookie of the year. You got Quinnen Williams up front. You have Aaron Rodgers. There's a reason to believe the Jets could be a really good team. But if you put the Arizona Cardinals on Hard Knocks, what is there to believe in? You're not going to get me fired up for Colt McCoy. I don't look at anyone on that wide receiving room being a number one wide receiver with DeAndre Hopkins not there. I know Buda Baker is at least there with the whole trade demand this offseason and all that. But there's nothing with the Arizona Cardinals that would make me say, oh, wow, now I actually believe in them. And also, their coach creeps me out, Jonathan Gannon, with that introductory video, with all the sound effects when he was talking to one of the wide receivers and he was like, boo, 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 and he sounded like he was a video game. He creeps me out. I'll tell you, that was the one negative thing I thought last night. I don't want my football coach to be happy-go-lucky Mr. Positive. I know Robert Saleh can tear into a player, and Robert Saleh, I'm sure, could be tough behind the scenes. I thought Robert Saleh last night was almost as if he was just, like, appreciative to be there, and it's like, oh, we have Aaron Rodgers, and this is the greatest thing in the world. Aaron Rodgers runs that team. We all know that. But it just comes off to me as Robert Saleh, who doesn't look like he would be the definition or the stereotypical definition of a very positive person, right? He's jacked. He looks intimidating and all that stuff. You know, he looks like a man's man. But I thought he was too positive last night. But that's kind of his coaching style, and that's how a lot of coaches now operate in 2023, where it's you got to be positive about everything and be a player-friendly coach.
He was in awe. That's a good word to use. And I really hope that, it's kind of one of those things where it's like you don't want to really meet your heroes in part because either you're starstruck or whatever. Sometimes they don't really appear as they seem on TV or whatever. It really felt like a lot of the Jets, and maybe it's because also their youth, a lot of these guys are rookies, second, third year in the league. Growing up watching Aaron Rodgers, it's like, wow, I can't believe I'm playing with Aaron Rodgers instead of let's go in a Super Bowl because now we got one of the quarterbacks to help us get there. You really hope that it's not just like all season, this is so cool, and you lose track of actually what you're there to do, which is win.
You know what it reminded me of? The Saleh Rodgers relationship last night. Remember before the Patriot-Rams Super Bowl, where we saw this afterwards when they do the mic'd up version of the Super Bowl? I think it's through NFL Films. And you had Sean McVay before the game go up to Bill Belichick in the Sean McVay like high-pitched voice where he kind of sounds like John Gruden on helium, where he goes, Bill, it's just such an honor, man, to coach up against you. Like right before the biggest game of your life at that point, you don't need to be fanboying over Bill Belichick. And you saw the year prior, Doug Peterson had a totally different interaction with Bill Belichick where you had a conversation, but you could see that look in Doug Peterson's eyes that it was like, I want to just absolutely defeat you tonight, and I'm going to do everything in my power, and hey, we'll talk at some point after the season or after this game, which was the final game of the season in the Super Bowl. That's the perfect way to equate the way that I felt in terms of the Saleh-Rodgers relationship. It was very similar to McVay fanboying over Bill Belichick in that Super Bowl. And I'll tell you, everything is going perfectly for Aaron Rodgers now, as it should. And I give Rodgers credit. Rodgers has embraced the Jets. He's embraced his younger teammates. He is now happy because he wasn't happy the last few years in Green Bay. He was working to prove a point to Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur that they made an enormous mistake in drafting his replacement. And now he goes to a place where he feels like he's wanted and they're going to do everything that Aaron Rodgers wants and everyone's genuflecting to Aaron Rodgers. So you look at Rodgers on Hard Knocks. You saw that last night, like we're talking about, which could be a negative and a positive. How many times? I thought it was actually cool, but I thought it was just too much, which shows you they really have no content. Where the guy that does the voiceover for Hard Knocks, like it was cool to see who that was, and Rodgers, you know, have an obsession and kind of fanboy over him. But it felt like they did like 15 minutes on that, so they probably didn't have a lot of content. But you know what one of my biggest takeaways was last night? And maybe it's because we've seen him play for a few years and he's been horrible. How the heck did Zach Wilson ever become the second overall pick in the draft, Hickey? Like, you look at him, and I know you can't just define someone based off looks, but even the coaching staff was like talking about how jacked Zach Wilson looked like. I know he's listed at 6'2". He does not look like he's 6'2". If you would have just showed me a picture of Zach Wilson, I would say he's probably a GQ model. That's what I would say. I would have never predicted that Zach Wilson is a quarterback in the NFL. And watching him last night on the show, he just doesn't even look like a quarterback. And because people thought he could be like, what, 50 or 65% of Patrick Mahomes with the mobility, and he had that really nice throw. I remember watching it to Dax Milne when he was playing at BYU. This guy ended up being the second overall pick in the draft. So I'm watching it last night, and maybe it's easier because we've already had the answer that this guy is not a successful quarterback in the league. So maybe that's why it becomes so eye-popping. But I'm watching that, I'm going, man, this guy just doesn't even look like a quarterback.
Well, I mean, he's by far, you talk about going back to that COVID year, there was no one that benefited more than Zach Wilson because that schedule BYU played was atrocious. He had a lot of national games. He looked good in them because they were beating the crap out of all these pathetic teams that they were playing because they couldn't get anyone else. And he benefited going up to number two. Now, I will say, yesterday, Zach Wilson did go up a notch in my books for one reason and one reason only.
And he didn't have a mustache, I don't think.
He did not have a mustache, and that would not be the reason.
And you're a big mustache guy. So, well, so what's the reason here?
The reason is, I don't know if you caught it at halftime.
Was he talking to a mom?
He was crushing an Uncrustable. That's your halftime snack.
Yeah.
I got your back. I got your back all day, every day. Look to me like grape jelly as well, which is absolutely the move to go. Good on Zach Wilson eating the only proper halftime snack you should in the NFL.
What was that exactly?
Uncrustable.
What is that?
You don't know what an Uncrustable is?
Did I just ask you what that was? What is that?
Wow, I am shocked. Uncrustable is literally exactly what it sounds like. It is little bread with the crust cut off, peanut butter, jelly smacked together. Sold by Smuckers. In stores everywhere.
Oh, I've seen this before now. Yeah, I think I've had that once. It's like a little pie, right?
Wow, you're missing out on life. You yell at me for my food takes. You are missing out on some of the greatest joys in life. Yet on Crystal one time, they are so good. They are truly the perfect snack you can have. I wish I had them more than I do. But good on Zach Wilson. Even though he can't play, that's separate, but at least he knows how to eat.
There you go. So Hickey's a big Uncrustable guy.
And you know what? If Aaron Rodgers eating them at halftime, I may change my pick to have the Jets win the Super Bowl.
You would?
No, but I'm just, you know, it'd get me closer to that.
The things you notice, I'm actually proud of you. You have, in the last year, really taken a big step in noticing little things that I don't think you would have noticed a year ago. So, Hickey, your big take all off season long, which Jet fans should be jumping for joy that this is your take, that the Jets won't make the playoffs. I know the AFC is loaded, and their own division is loaded. I would be very surprised, as long as Rodgers is healthy, that they would miss the playoffs. Like, I don't see, and I don't feel that this, and this is not a Hard Knocks take, I've been saying this all offseason, I don't feel as if they're going to miss the playoffs. But bare minimum for this year to be a success, they need to be in the AFC championship game. Because you have a 2 to 3 year window here with Aaron Rodgers, and I think we'll be probably three if I had to pick between 2 and 3. And this is a year where he needs to go in there and take that next step for this organization and make them believe that they could go win a Super Bowl. And if you go and get to an AFC title game this year and have a good showing in that AFC title game, with him taking $35 million less on the way that he did this contract, then you could go really gear up with the full offseason and get those missing pieces. But I don't think the Jets are going to an AFC title game this year. So we have a poll question today. Will Aaron Rodgers be playing in the AFC championship game this season? Yes. Will lose in the wild card or divisional round is another option, or won't make the playoffs? Hickey, if you had to take a guess right now, what do you think 1, 2, and 3, most likely to least likely, the way our listening audience is responding right now?
Especially after last night, I think without a doubt, number one, most people are going to say in the AFC title game, yes.
You're actually wrong on that.
Wow.
That's the fewest response.
Wow.
12.6% when I asked, will Aaron Rodgers be playing in the AFC title game this year? 12.6% say yes. Now, will lose in the wild card slash divisional round or won't make the playoffs? What do you think is the higher calculated poll response there?
Lose in the wild card, I think, is the league leader. So I'll say in second place will be miss the playoffs.
Yep. So lose in the wild card or divisional rounds at 51.5% and won't make the playoffs 35.9%. So The way that I would order this, one, will lose in the wild card or divisional round at 51.5%. And then I will go because of that defense and bringing in a stable quarterback, getting to the AFC title game. And then the last one won't make the playoffs. I think that they have a chance to win this division. Right now, I would go Miami. Buffalo and the Jets are definitely two wild card teams then. I do think all three out of those four AFC East teams will make it. The Patriots won't. And then that final spot, it's going to be between the Ravens, the Browns. You could throw the Steelers in the mix, the Chargers. I don't believe in the Broncos this year, but if you want to throw them in the mix as well, okay. And I do think your final wild card team will be the Chargers. So I go through those divisions. AFC East right now, I'm picking the Dolphins. North, I'm going the Bengals. I'm not concerned about this Burrow injury. It's August. It's not September. The South, the Jaguars. The West, the Chiefs. And then for my wild card teams, in no order, Jets, the Bills, and then also the Los Angeles Chargers. So those are my seven playoff teams in the AFC, and I do think the Jets are going to be a really good team this year, but not a great team that goes to a Super Bowl. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. First and goal coming up next. Is Baker Mayfield not going to win this job in Tampa? I don't think so, but we'll go to Rick Stroud, because right now the Buccaneers on their depth chart for QB1, it's Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. The NFL season is inching closer and closer. Who are the contenders and who are the pretenders? We have four downs to figure out your team's future. It's time now for First and Goal on the Zach Gelb Show.
Alrighty, time to preview the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll talk about this team a lot differently than the last few years because Tom Brady is no longer there as he has finally walked away from the NFL and is retired. Let's go down to Tampa, though, and we will talk to a man who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a long time. You can always check him out in the Tampa Bay Times. And that, of course, is Rick Stroud. Rick, appreciate you doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well, Zach. What's up?
So I appreciate you coming on, doing well. Everyone's reacting to this depth chart by Todd Bowles where it's Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask as the starter. We know Baker will start the first preseason game. Kyle will then start the second. What do you make of the or designation on the depth chart?
I mean, that's, what really Dave Canales said from the first day he got the job was, he was going to have a quarterback competition. They did this in Seattle with Geno Smith and Drew Lock. So, I mean, this is what he's promised, and it's kind of what they're delivering. And, I give Kyle Trask a lot of credit. I think he's improved. A lot was stacked against him. He worked in one offense for 2 years. They took that away, took his quarterback coach away. It's not really an offense that, is one for a guy who's more of a pocket passer, but he's improved his feet. And he's being competitive. But at the end of the day, and I've said this even to Dave, it's like, okay, so whoever wins this job, and I think, it's sort of the etiquette of football. You have to earn it, right? Like competition is good and all that. But whoever takes that field in Minnesota will have had half the reps in training camp in preseason. So if that helps you prepare to win games, so be it. But, I've said all along, I think it's going to be Baker Mayfield, and until something changes, I'm going to stick with that.
Right. Like, I would be shocked. And I know Baker's stock is not in a wonderful position. Heck, you got to compete to go get this job. But I would be shocked if it's not Baker week one.
Well, I would too. And really, it's not so much about Kyle Trask. Like I said, he's come a long way. And in the best case scenario for the Bucs is that, you know, they've had a, you know, sort of a diamond in the rough the whole time. And you know, this is what Kyle has done his whole career. He didn't start in high school. He sat behind Felipe Franks in college at Florida. And then when he got his shot, man, he ripped it, you know, and he did really, really well. If that happens in the NFL, that's the best scenario, right? Then they got their quarterback for the future. But he has been here 2 years, and they still went and got Baker Mayfield. And if they were that convinced that he was that dude, then I don't think there would be a competition necessarily. But, you know, look, Baker is somebody that Todd Bowles is familiar with. He scouted him when he came out of the draft. Bowles was in with the Jets, thought he may last to number three. He didn't. He likes him a lot. This is Baker's fourth team, though, you know, in the last calendar year since last July. So he's trying to reset, and, you know, we'll see where it goes. But it's going to be interesting to start a guy that has nine snaps in the NFL over somebody that is, you know, that has played 5 years and done some good things in this league.
When you look at Tom Brady, no longer there, clearly, he retired. A lot of people, and we've even talked about this before, Rick Stroud said that last year was going to be his final season in Tampa, but we all assumed he'd go somewhere else. When we found out that Brady retired, what was that initial reaction by you?
You mean the second time when we found out? Yeah.
Good point.
I don't know if there'll be a third, so we'll see. You know, again, I guess if you say it once, you say it twice, and you don't come to camp anywhere, you believe it. Now, you know, he has this minority ownership agreement, you know, with Mark Davis, with the Raiders. I haven't seen that accepted or even debated necessarily by NFL owners to get approval. I don't know where that stands. Right now, he's a free agent like any other quarterback that's not playing currently. So where that goes, I have no idea, but you know, look, at some point during the year, a contending team is going to lose their quarterback, and the first guy they're going to call is Tom Brady, if in fact he's still available and doesn't require ownership approval. So we'll see. I know he's enjoying his life. He should, and he's got three great kids that he spends a lot of time with. So it's a transition period for him, but he did take a year. That gap year, if you will, before he's supposed to start calling games, I guess, for Fox.
It seems like you're not going to say that you would be shocked if he ended up coming back at some point this season with another team.
Well, I mean, look, he's addicted to football, and he has said that it's not because he can't play. It's he's choosing not to, and that other things are more important. But if you got into late in the season and you needed, you know, the guy in San Francisco, and this is, again, assuming he was still completely free and not beholden to the Raiders or any other team for ownership reasons, what would think that Tom Brady, you know, couldn't roll out of bed and know more than the other guy the next Sunday in terms of preparation? If it was the right offense, the right system, you know, I don't know. We've seen that before. I'm not necessarily think that that's the way Brady would ever want to approach playing. you know, he always wants to be at his best. There's always been a process he goes through. But look, look what happened in San Francisco a year ago. You know, if that occurs to a division leader late in the year, I just know the phone calls are always going to come. He's always going to get opportunities that even he doesn't anticipate.
Let's get to the next down. Talking to Rick Stroud, where's this offensive line at entering this season? I know Wirfs moved over to the left side, but how about the rest of the unit?
Well, I think they got a lot of question marks, and you know, a lot of those guys are back, but they're in different positions. I mean, if you just look at it, we haven't seen Ryan Jensen take a snap even in practice. Yeah, he was out all last year. He tore three knee ligaments. He had no surgery. He did play against Dallas in the wild card game. No, he did not play well. And since then, it's been over a year since his injury, he hasn't really competed in playing football. And Todd Bowles told me the other day he doesn't know when he will. So that's daunting in and of itself. But they've got Robert Haynes, who started last year. Nick Leverett's competing there. You know, you take Tristan Wirfs, who's an all-pro at right tackle. You move him to left tackle. And he's talked about the mental strain of trying to maintain his standard on the other side. But that's a work in progress. I think he'll be fine. Most people do. You know, Cody Mock is a rookie that they're very high on. He's going to start at right guard. They're moving Luke Getteke, who struggled as a guard but has always played right tackle in college. Now he's going to be their right tackle. So, you know, Matt Filer comes over from the Chargers. He's a veteran player. So they got guys. I think the biggest change is going to be the scheme, right? Dave Canales is going to come in here, run a lot of outside zone runs. That should seem to suit some of the personnel they have. These guys can be mobile. They can move. And you know, maybe that helps protect the quarterback a little bit with all the bootlegs and the waggles and things. But I don't know what they have. They've got pieces. They have not played together. And we're just going to have to see, like a lot of things with this Buck team.
For a while, Byron Leftwich is being talked about to be an NFL head coach. He gets fired this offseason, and Canales now is the new offensive coordinator. I haven't seen Leftwich land on any NFL staff. Is that surprising to you?
Well, it is, and it's disappointing. I think the timing of it was bad. I know that BA's intent when Bruce Arians retired was so that staff could remain together. Now, it was March 30th when Todd Bowles got the job a year ago. He didn't and wasn't able to hire anyone else. You know, he wasn't happy, made a lot of changes. I think 9 assistants were changed. And Byron did not get a look. And I think that's unfortunate, because what happened to Byron was when they were successful before Tom Brady, it was Bruce Arians. It was the reason. It was his offense, even though he didn't call a play and he didn't game plan. And, yeah, Jameis Winston threw 30 interceptions, but he also threw 5,000 yards. And they had a top offense, one of the top offenses in the league. Then Tom Brady shows up. And then it was all because Tom Brady was the quarterback when they won the Super Bowl, and it was still Bruce Arians' offense. So Byron has been sort of the victim of and the recipient of guys around him. And I don't know, you know, how he interviews. I know it felt like he was very close to getting the Jaguars job a year ago. It didn't happen for whatever reason. I hope he gets another opportunity if he wants it to coach, because I think he's a good communicator. I know he knows football. And there's not many NFL quarterbacks that have seen the game actually from the quarterback position that can go out there and coach. So don't have an answer for you, but it's unfortunate.
Let's get to the next down. Talking to Rick Stroud, what do you think the ceiling is this year for the defense?
Well, I think they can be pretty good. Now, they're not deep, but I like some of the young players that they've brought on board. And I think, you know, he's injured right now. With a calf injury, but really that starts with Kalijah Kancey. I mean, they're going a little different. You know, they've been used to putting, you know, another 350-pound guy next to 360-pound Vita Vea. And I think their defense, especially the interior line, was getting a little old and a little slow. So you add a guy like Kalijah Kancey, who is not Aaron Donald, but played at the same school and reminds people of him. It's an unfair comparison, but he's going to bring a lot of speed to go with the power they already have. They got to have Logan Hall step up. You know, Joe Tryon-Shoyinka has plateaued at 4.5 sacks a year. He's got to get better. You don't know what you're going to get from Shaquille Barrett, who's coming off an Achilles injury. But look, they got enough guys from that Super Bowl defense that are still viable players. The Devin Whites, they've re-signed Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis, Antoine Winfield Jr., Ryan Neal's a great addition at safety for them. I think that this is going to be is an underrated defense right now. They're going to have to drive the car a little bit here until that offense is able to assimilate into what, you know, their coordinator wants them to do. But I still think they can play pretty good defense, and I like Yaya Diaby. I like you know, some of the guys they've added with Sebastian Dennis and different guys like that. So I'm anxious to see how they play.
Let's get to the final down. On the way out with Rick Stroud for the Tampa Bay Times. For Todd Bowles, we know the seat's warm. Bare minimum, what do you think he has to do this year for him to be back next season?
Well, you know, the record wasn't good because they were only going to win 9 games at maximum, but they clinched the division with 8. They didn't play their starters against Atlanta. When they were in there, they were leading the game. So whether you want to say 8 or 9 wins, they still managed to win the NFC South. No, it wasn't a great division, but that's only the 7th title in franchise history. So you can credit him for that or discredit him for not having a winning record, which he's only done 1 time in 5 seasons as a head coach. So this is a very big year for any head coach, much less Todd Bowles. They're trying to thread a needle here. You know, they're trying to keep enough pieces from their Super Bowl team in a weak division and try to go back-to-back-to-back and win this division. I think they'll be really competitive. I think the division, depending on what New Orleans does, they would be the favorites, but you might win it with 9 or 10 games again. We'll just have to see, but he's going to need to win, if not the division, try to get back in the playoffs, have a winning record, show progress, those kinds of things. But it's going to be awfully difficult without the GOAT in there, trust me.
Rick Stroud, we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the season. Thanks for doing this.
You bet. Take care.
There you go. Rick Stroud joining us for the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio for a little First and Goal, previewing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll take a break. We'll come on back. We'll update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio with the news brief.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Extra, extra, read all about it.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
In like one of the weakest stories ever yesterday, Ron Rivera is doing his press conference and he was asked about it, so I guess word was getting out. But it was just so unnecessary. There's some players on the Commanders who had a dreadful offense last year. Now you have a new offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, who's been around Mahomes, right? They've won all those Super Bowls together. And some of the players are saying the coaching is too hard by Eric Bieniemy right now. So that became a big story. I think it's ridiculous. I have no problem with Eric Bieniemy. I think those players should not need to be a drill sergeant all the time, but they should listen to Bieniemy. Not that he's the end-all be-all, but he's been around really good offensive play, and not that he deserves all the credit, but he deserves some credit for the success in Kansas City. Well, here's Ron Rivera today apologizing for sending the wrong message when talking about Eric Bieniemy yesterday.
You know, I realize my comments yesterday took on a different life than I intended yesterday, and that's on me for not being as clear as I needed to be. I'll own that. At the end of the day, we know that we're trying to build here, and we're all aligned. As I've said many times since I've hired Eric, I love the overall message that he gave to the team his first day, and that was basically, we gotta learn to be comfortable when we're uncomfortable.
So it's a tough sell when yesterday you have players that are concerned by Eric Bieniemy's intensity, and then today you go, nothing to see here, folks. We're all aligned. Like Hickey, you already said what you said if you're Ron Rivera. You already let the cat out of the bag, or enough people did where I guess one member of the media knew about this. And now it became a story. You can't tell me today that you're all aligned, because clearly there's some players that right now have their concerns about Eric Bieniemy.
And speaking of alignment, I was actually thinking about this a lot today and now listening to Ron Rivera's comments as well. Whose side is Ron Rivera on? Like yesterday he did say go talk to the players, but it's not like he offered yesterday any sort of defending of Eric Bieniemy. And so far through one clip, he's apologizing that this more became a story compared to Eric Bieniemy is a great coach. Why aren't people listening to him?
If I had to answer that question, it seems like he's on the side of the players. Now, with that being said, that's a bad job by Ron Rivera. Because Ron Rivera, you've brought in Eric Bieniemy to be the head coach of your offense. You believed in him, and there's a reason to believe in him. You can't be jumping off that ship that quickly. And then also, I think what happened here is Ron really does regret what happened yesterday, but you're the head football coach, and you are a seasoned head football coach. And the last 2 years, we've seen Ron make a bigger deal out of something than it needed to be, like last year storming off after the Wentz stuff, and then this year, we haven't even got to the start of the season. Things are actually being positive about the Commanders because you don't have that POS, let me say that correctly, and Daniel Snyder there anymore. And now it's like all that positive momentum, not that it lets the air out of the entire balloon, but it's like an unnecessary distraction here.
I mean, we haven't even played a preseason game yet. And it's like there's like a thought of like if Ron Rivera is like either questioning the hire or questioning the coaching practices and not coming to the defense of the guy he hired.
Now, Ron doesn't come off to me as someone that's insecure. He doesn't. And he is a professional, and I love Ron Rivera. He's always great when he comes on this show. But do you think he's starting to get a little bit insecure because people are floating out there? Ron's on the hot seat. You have a new owner coming in Josh Harris. Maybe the first hire will be, if the enemy has a solid season, that they'll make him the head coach if they feel like they need to make a change at the head coaching position. Is some of that maybe get in the head of Ron Rivera?
I'm going to say no, because in order for Ron Rivera to keep his job, he needs the offense to play well. Right? Like if the offense stinks.
What happens if the offense is good and the defense, which is supposed to be good but wasn't good last year, ends up being a problem?
Then he's probably fired. Like, so if you're Ron Rivera, in order to keep your job, you bare minimum need the offense to play well. Right? You're not just firing Eric Bieniemy and then you're going to get a choice of another offense coordinator if the offense is like 20th again like it's been in past years.
Yeah, they got to make the playoffs this year. Ron Rivera says the team has improved on offense drastically during training camp.
Change is hard, and I've always encouraged our players to have great dialogue and build relationships with our staff. Since those conversations took place with Eric and the players, I've seen the improvements. And I can honestly say that the last couple of practices probably have been the best of training camp, which I think is great. To me, that displays the team is beginning to embrace the message and approach to how he does things and how we want things done.
So I'm not naive here. Like, when you bring in a new coach, the coach has to trust the players and the players has to trust the coach. And there's sometimes arguments or questions that get asked, but they don't get out there publicly. The players wanted this out there publicly. So with the fact that it got out there and Ron Rivera also wanted it out there, it's tough to keep on saying that you actually believe in Bieniemy when this got out there. Because, Hickey, we say this all the time. There's a lot that doesn't get out, and there's a lot that we don't know about in the NFL. And usually things only get out when people want them to get out.
And again, going back to what he said initially yesterday, he specifically highlighted younger players and mentioned college football, meaning like these are a lot of new guys in the NFL getting adjusted to it. Again, you're really going to take the side of newbies or still early in their career guys and you're going to say, you know what, you're right, coach is too hard. Again, I'm going to ask the same question I asked 2 minutes ago. What are we doing here? It's August 9th. We've not played one game. How can this already be happening?
I'm laughing because I haven't really heard the word newbies in a while. It kind of like you wanted to say L7 weenies instead. That's where I was.
That we can go there too.
Going.
Squares, you know, greenies, greenhorns. I think is the word. That's it from Deadliest Catch. Greenhorns.
Yeah, that's above my pay grade. If I'm being honest.
Right, Deadliest Catch guy, huh?
Nah, haven't seen it ever. Good.
I love it. Great show.
Okay. Let's hear Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC. This is on the Paul Feinbaum show. Actually, shouldn't we call him Paul Feinbaum after his ridiculous comments about Nick Saban, how his legacy could be on the line this year, and he can't afford to miss the college football playoff, and his legacy could take a hit? Just ridiculous from Paul. But here is the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, saying changes to the college football playoff format need to be considered. Remember, they're going to 12 next year.
And here in the SEC, we wanted college football to be strong nationally, and we've not seen a West of the Rockies participant in the playoffs since, I believe, 2016. And so the expansion was about making sure we brought in Western football. Well, now what's happened is Western football has come into other conferences. The net of that is circumstances have changed, and I think it's wise for us to take a step back and reconsider what the format might look like given these changed circumstances.
So my understanding of this format that's going to happen next year, which I'm opposed to going to 12 teams, but I already lost that battle, is that you get the five Power Five conference champions a guaranteed spot, and then the best non-Power Five conference champ also gets it, and then it's everybody else, Hickey, that could find a way to clinch one of those 12 spots?
That is correct. 6 automatic qualifiers, 6 at-large bids.
You good on the math there? 6 + 6 = 12
Well, I forgot what to call the other guys. I had to go my college basketball. When I used to talk about this in college football, I got to go my college basketball vernacular.
That's why we're in radio, because we're not best at math. And anytime we have to do math, even if it's the easiest mental math ever, we always get concerned. I always tell the story how I once said when Loyola Chicago was on a run, there was a 60-30 chance that they could win. And then a listener said, what about the other 10%? And I said, yeah, that's for Sister Jean, or it was like 4:30 in the morning. So things like that happen. Well, yeah, you got to change the format, because the Pac-12 is either going to go away or they're going to add the Mountain West with the remaining four Pac-12 schools, and that shouldn't get an automatic qualifying spot. So they're going to have to change something. I don't think, Hickey, that they're going to go off the number 12 and reduce the amount of teams that they're going to allow into the college football playoff. I would like that, because I was against expansion to begin with. But you're going to have to find a way to get, what is it now, the core four, I guess. The real power four conferences will get automatic bids, and then the one non-power four spot, and then it will be whatever wildcard spots end up getting in. That seems like the easiest way to do it here.
Automatically, who qualifies absolutely has to change, but in terms of the number, I think you need 12 now more than ever.
How do you negotiate it, though, in terms of, like, if let's say the Pac-12 merges with another conference, like the Mountain West, and they still go by the name of the Pac-12, does the Pac-12 have any leg to stand on in terms of negotiations here?
No. No, it is now the Power Four. The Power Five is no longer will exist after 2023. So you go to the Power Four, Big 12, ACC, Big 10, SEC.
But what happens if the Pac-12 still stays?
I don't think...
Like, isn't this negotiated where you
I
get
mean,
the five teams?
The Mountain West is more teams, so they would absorb the four teams remaining. I don't think...
What happens if those teams say, hey, we're going to go join the Pac-12 and take the Pac-12 name because of the brand and the spot in the college football playoff?
Well, I don't think that's going to exist, and they could try for it. That's not going to happen in terms of getting the automatic bid.
I would agree, but you never know. Like, we all thought the Big 12 was going to go away, and that didn't happen. And finally, Zach Taylor provides an update on Joe Burrow with the calf strain.
Well, I mean, the timeline is several weeks from when I said several weeks, so we'll let that play out.
So if it was several weeks, and now it's several weeks later, is it several weeks more? I do think this is overblown. Like, if he's not 100%, I would not play him against the Browns. But if you put a gun to my head right now, I would say that Joe Burrow is on the field week one, even if Ja'Marr Chase doesn't want that to be the case. Didn't mean to rhyme there, but hey, I did so. All right, I'm a poet. I didn't even know it. Zach Yelp, Show CBS Sports Radio. Five coaches under the most pressure next.